Hey friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week on this show, I invite a friend to join me, and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between. Hey friends, and welcome to another episode of the Happy Hour. I'm your host, Jamie, and today my friend Melissa Zaldivar joins us, and we have a really great conversation about something that doesn't feel really great, but it is something that is here in all of our lives, and that is loss. More specifically, we talk about death in this episode, and Melissa wrote a book. It comes out in about a month, and I had the joy of reading it early, and I read it over the weekend before I chatted with her. And in this book, Melissa so brilliantly weaves in three stories: her own journey of walking through the loss of her friend Jill. Part of her Jill story is in here. And then Louisa May Alcott, the writer of Little Women, the author, she weaves that story in there as well. And it is just a really great read. But more importantly, today we have a really great conversation about what it means to actually walk through loss. We talk today about how do we journey through friendships who have experienced loss? How do we be the friend that shows up in a time of need? We talk about what it means to look around at our lives and really cherish and devour the normal, ordinary things. So many times we want the big, flashy, the cinematic life. And we spent time today talking about how the most important things are sometimes the most mundane, normal things. Although the subject is difficult in this conversation, and although it can feel a little bit depressed and maybe anxiety ridden, I want you to know that we spent also time talking about the hope that we have, that as believers, that death is not the end of our story. And so we have a hope that can't be shaken, the hope that cannot be put to shame. And we talk about that today as well. So although the conversation can feel hard, it is actually really encouraging. And I want to let you know, if you're someone who is feeling as though life just keeps throwing things at you, we've all been there. I've had seasons where I just feel like I can't take another thing, God. If you feel that way, I want to encourage you to get through this show and get to the end, because Melissa has a really great encouraging word for you. You guys, before we get to the conversation with Melissa and I just want to say thank you to all of you guys who have left ratings and reviews for the show. You know, we ask you for these ratings and reviews. It's not so that we can sit around and feel better about ourselves. We do love reading the nice things that you say. But really, these ratings and reviews that you leave, they help other people find the show. And so if you've been blessed by any of my guests on the Happy Hour, if there's any conversations that you think, wow, that really was just for me today, you might have other friends that need to know about this. And so you could always just text them and send them the link to the show. But if you want to take the extra mile, if you want to take the extra minute in your day to go over there and do that, we would greatly appreciate it. We recently got a 5-star review, and they said, "Wonderful podcast. I love Jamie and her team. She does a great job at bringing in voices that may not have the biggest platforms so that they can be heard. I love her authenticity and can't wait to listen to more." Thank you so much for that review, and I really take all of those kind words to heart. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We do think about you as a listener when we create every single show. And so even you'll hear me reference that in today's show. I'll say a couple times, I'm thinking of the listener who might. And I am. I'm thinking of you guys who might be going through something really hard, and Melissa has a good word for you. So guys, thank you so much for tuning in today. We really, really appreciate every single listen that you give us. And the show today, you're going to love. And I must say, we have some phenomenal shows scheduled for you coming up for the rest of the year. Would you like a little sneak peek? I'm going to give you one. Max Lucado, Christy Malzahn, whose husband is a coach in the college football level, Kay Warren, Amy Hannon, Shannon Martin, Jenny and David Mars, Vivian Mabuni, Allison Cook, Lisa Turkhurst. I just told you, we have some really great people coming on the show. And although I haven't interviewed all of them yet, and so I can't tell you how awesome the shows are, I can almost guarantee that they're going to be awesome, because all these people love God and have beautiful things to say about the work he's doing in their lives. And they want to help you with that as well. So grateful for all of your listens, and we are super excited about the shows that we're finishing out 2022 with you and the Happy Hour. All right, you guys, enough conversation. Here's my conversation with Melissa Zaldivar. Melissa, welcome back to the Happy Hour.
Thanks. It's good to be back. I was like, I think I was on it like 8 months ago. I said to someone, it was like 2 years ago.
It actually, if we want to be legit, it was in September of 2020.
Yeah.
2 years ago.
That's exactly right. And so I just, it made me realize, like, where has time gone? Because I could have sworn it was, like, 8 months ago.
What's the craziest thing that's happened to you in the last 2 years? Since you came on the happy hour, craziest
thing. I came
on
the happy hour. Some of the stuff we talked about turned into a book, which is fun. So maybe that's why time doesn't make sense right now, because I've just been in my attic writing a book and figuring all that out.
You've been in your attic writing a book. Okay, so you tell everyone where you live.
I live in Massachusetts, just north of Boston on the coast, which is fun. And so it's a little Gilmore Girlsy, I like to say, though I know you have not seen it.
Still to this day, I have not seen it.
Yeah.
I know.
So I live up there and it's just like small town, super fun. There's a lot going on and yet nothing is really going on.
That sounds dreamy.
Everyone's real upset because the cell phone tower hasn't gotten power yet.
Uh-oh.
That's been the big controversy. Is when are they just going to plug that sucker in? And it's literally been like 9 months of people posting on the Facebook page every time a call is dropped. Because they're like, guys, another call was dropped today when I was talking to my friend. When are we getting the cell tower?
Let me tell you where I don't hang out, Melissa. Any Facebook page where people are putting comments about something that happened that made their day go bad. That's not where I'm going to be.
Though a lot of lost dogs, a lot of like, hey, has anyone seen this? You know, and then like 20 minutes, oh, we found him, he's in the backyard. But Everybody chimed in.
Now, you told me that New England is how many states?
It's 6 states. So they are Massachusetts, obviously we start with the best, Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. So it's kind of that, it's the way I like to describe it, it's like the Midwest, right, is this chunk of states, or the Southwest. Mm-hmm. Like, it is the Pacific Northwest. New England is a region. It is not its own state. They are different states, but those are the 6 that comprise it. New York, for the record, is not New England.
Is it just New York?
It's just New York.
Okay.
It's just New York. But people will be like, oh, I haven't been to New England. No, wait, I went to New York City. And I'm always like, nope.
Listen, you're educating the best of us right now about this. But I was going to tell you that I'd never been to New England, but that's a lie. So where when Aaron and I got married, we actually honeymooned in New Hampshire.
Ooh, that's fun. Like by the coast or like in the mountains?
Okay, it was a long time ago, Melissa. I don't remember. And we had just gotten married and we were just concerned with other things.
I was like, you were thinking about the outside. We were just considering indoors. Yeah.
No, we flew into Boston. We were babies. So 23, 22. I think Aaron could barely rent a car.
Yep.
And then we drove up to New Hampshire. I don't even remember the city.
That's great.
We stayed in this cute little inn. And the other day I was cleaning out our laundry room and I found the little checkout thing.
Aww.
And I tucked it away in a safe place because we might go back there one day.
Oh, that would be like a fun anniversary trip.
But the thing that Aaron and I said is like, what if it's like really, really like crappy?
Oh, yeah.
But at the time we were like, this is the nicest place we've ever stayed.
Yeah.
But now we're, 21 years, we're adults. Mm-hmm. When you're 22, things are nice that aren't nice when you're 44.
That's true.
That's a truth statement. So I have been up there and it was lovely.
Oh, I love it. And it's good memories.
Very good memories.
It's not
even
like
though
you
I don't
were
remember
up
the
there
city we were in.
One day she'll find out. She'll let me know. And it'll be great.
One day I'll find out. Well, I'm really glad that you're back. And this time you're here in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
You brought us chocolate chip cookies straight from your oven because you told us that chocolate chips were founded, started.
Chocolate chip cookies were like the recipe was invented in Massachusetts.
I mean, that's claim to fame.
It really, and it's a lot about, it really makes sense for my personality. I feel like I love a good just chocolate chip. Like
plain.
If I get a burger
somewhere.
Do you
put oatmeal in those chocolate chip cookies?
Sometimes, but not these.
Okay.
Not these. These
okay,
are just
good.
Classic. But, I'm the same way. If I go to a restaurant and they have a burger, I always just try their basic burger before anything crazy.
Oh.
Because I just need a baseline. I need a good baseline.
I went to the Texas game this weekend and we got in and we got burgers and I thought that my burger would come with something on it.
Yeah.
But it was just a patty and 2 pieces of bread and I felt like a five-year-old.
What were they expecting you to do with that?
I wanted some lettuce and pickles and all the things. But anyhow, thank you for the chocolate chip cookies.
Of course.
As we interview, Lindsay and Ashley are eating them and I can see them eating them. And so
teasing you.
All I want is some chocolate chip cookies. But thank you for your gift. I told you this weekend I texted you because we have each other's phone numbers.
Yep.
And I told you I was reading your book. And what people can't see is that your publisher...
It looks like it's in a binder right here.
Your publisher
did quote-unquote book.
Did send me a binder full of your book. But I read it this weekend, and I want you to know that I 100% read every book of anyone I ever interview. That is a true statement. I read almost every word of this book.
Wow.
Because I loved it so much.
Thanks.
It felt like the book I didn't know I needed.
Mm.
It felt like the book that maybe we all need coming out of 2020. And it felt like you took your heart and just poured it out onto these pages.
Yeah, I spent about 30 minutes crying about it last night. So, like, we are far removed from when I turned in the manuscript. You know, we're 9 months out from having turned it in, and I don't know how the next 8 weeks are going to go. Everyone pray for me, because it is kind of my heart out there. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh no, like people are just going to read it. And it's a different level of vulnerability with this story than the first book. And so I am bracing myself.
Let's just cut to the chase here. You wrote a book about death.
Yeah, it's a real upper. It's a real upper.
Okay, we're both Enneagram 6s, so I was about to say something, but I think you'll be able to relate to me. I actually really love conversations like this.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's like, let's just cut all the crap out of life.
Yep.
And let's just cut to the chase, is that this is a reality mm-hmm. that we're all having to live with. Not necessarily our own death, but grieving through the loss of those that we love.
Yeah.
And that's the book that you came from. And this came from your life. You mentioned a little bit, we talked about this a little bit the last time you were on, but I want you to give us a little bit more conversation. You tell tell three stories in this book. You tell Jill's story,
mm-hmm.
you tell Louisa's story,
mm-hmm.
and you tell your own story.
Yeah.
And you weave them together. So can you give us a little bit of background on Jill?
Yeah. So Jill was a friend of mine in college. We met when we were freshmen. We were baby freshmen. You know, you got the ice cream social, you got the orientation games, all those sorts of things. And so she and I met. We didn't become friends until like our second or third year of school, but I'd see her around and things like that. And then ended up becoming close friends, was in her wedding. And then at the new year in 2019, she got very sick. And ended up dying before the year was over. And so it was this journey of, it was kind of a fast and furious friendship, right? It was like, there's all this fierceness and fun and all of these different things that made, it's like a college friendship, which is really fun. Because now when I remember her, she's perpetually in her 20s, right? And she'll never be older than 28. And so it's this feeling of like, man, that was really fun. But also really deeply hard and hurtful, the way that death hurts, right? And so so Jill's story is one of looking to God's faithfulness all the way to the end. And just this morning, I was talking to some of her loved ones about it, and it was like, man, she is really fun. I wish that she was here in the studio. That's why I was like crying yesterday, because I was like, oh, it'd be so much more fun if I could tell you these stories with her. Mm-hmm. And it feels there's definitely a gap now that she's not here.
You write in your book, you say, we as Christians are people of the resurrection. We have this incredible hope beyond the grave, and yet we somehow are still afraid of the grave.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about how you see people who are followers of Jesus, who, like you say, we have this incredible hope that death is not the end. That's mm-hmm. like foundation of our faith, right?
Yeah.
But yet we do fear it. I want to talk to me about how you see people doing that. And I want to hear from you how you would answer this differently now versus previous to 2019 and walking through what you've walked through with Jill.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have this idea of what death is. We really like control. That's the first thing I think of.
Wait, I do. You too?
That's weird.
Okay.
So, yes, I think that we like control. So we like to control a narrative, a situation, and death is just its own thing. It is out of our control. There's nothing you can do to stop it. There's this beautiful line, actually, in Little Women, which we'll get to, where Beth in the 2019 film says, you know, it's like the tide. It cannot be stopped. Mm. And I feel that way sometimes, where death just reminds us how out of control we are. And so when it comes to thinking through death now, I notice there is a little bit of a slowness and a carefulness. I have not learned all the lessons of death. In fact, yesterday when I was flying here, I got on an earlier flight than I was supposed to be on. This is a crazy story. I got on an earlier flight. I arrived at the airport like in a record amount of time because it was a holiday. And so I was like, oh, I got like an hour and a half to kill. And then there was a flight leaving like at 8 a.m. instead of 9 a.m. And so I went and saw if I could get on it, because I had a layover and that would give me more time, you know, planning. And so they put me on the 8 o'clock flight instead of the 9. And I sat down next to this woman, and she and I start talking, and it comes out in the conversation that she has cancer, same kind of cancer Jill had.
Wow.
She is about to start her second round of treatment for it. And so she was on a trip visiting her family and seeing everyone while she still had some energy. And then she was going to. And I just remember thinking, this is too strange. And also so specifically the same story right. in terms of like where we were at. And I just kept thinking, this is Jill, like, it reminds me of her, but we also don't know how this woman's story is going to end, right? We don't know, you know, what the end will be. And so I think that, you know, I went into that conversation with that woman and I started talking to her. And one of the first things I said, Jamie, was I asked her how old she was and she told me. And I was like, well, you know, like, the good news is the older you are, the better you're able to deal specifically with ovarian cancer treatment and blah, blah, blah. And I'm telling her this to kind of be reassuring. And she looks at me and she was like, yeah, I don't really try to think about that very much. And immediately I was like, dang it. Like, the first thing I even write in the book, like, yeah, you do. Don't give people statistics. Yep. And the first thing out of my mouth. And so I think I'm just learning that it's always going to be messy. It's always going to be uncomfortable at times, mm-hmm. but the more we're willing to go into it with that expectation, the more there's a sense where we can actually have honest conversations about it, because we're not just trying to control outcomes by saying certain things.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk in here and you just did it again so beautifully, as you kind of set up the stage like, I'm going to go first and I'm going to be willing to talk mm-hmm. about this. And I want to bring up the whole little woman connection here. And you say in here that Louisa went first. Mm-hmm. And so she was willing to say stuff. So I want you to talk a little bit about the connection to this author and her sisters and the book, because I want you to talk about it, but I need a confession first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've not read the book.
That's fine.
I want to read the book so badly right now.
I all literally right. we'll do and book I, club.
I'll do a book club.
That'd be so fun.
That would be so fun.
We should read Little Women. Oh my gosh.
Let's do a Little Women book club.
All right. You heard it here first, folks.
I'm dead serious.
I know you're dead serious.
And then we finish with a tour up to New England.
Oh my gosh. And then I'll take you in.
Lindsay's like, yes. It's like, yes. She stopped me to eat her chocolate chip cookie to say, yes, I'm in.
Oh, 100%.
Make sure her and Ashley don't eat all my cookies.
That's right. Don't get too excited, guys.
Listen. I read this and I was telling Lindsay today earlier, I was like, I think I've seen a movie. I feel really bad right now that I'm admitting about but how little knowledge bad. I have about these sweet sisters. And I think I've seen the most recent movie. Mm-hmm. But the way that you used her story mm. was brilliant, first of all. So I want to talk a little bit about why did you bring that into this story mm-hmm. and how did she go first and what did that look like for her?
Oh, goodness. So Louisa May Alcott, for those of you who are in the same boat, there are plenty of people in the same boat. I recognize I live in a weird part of America where there's all this obscure history and this is part of it. And so some people might not be aware. So first of all, don't worry. Welcome. We're glad you're here. Louisa May Alcott was a part of the Alcott family. Her father was a philosopher. Her mother was a stay-at-home mom. They called her Marmy, which is just a fun name for mom, right? So, and yeah. So,
fun fact. My brother and his wife, their kids call her mom Marmy.
I love it.
And it's so cute.
It's so sweet. It's just like, yeah, it's like a term, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone calls their moms different things. So Louisa May Alcott is living during the Civil War. She grew up in Concord, Massachusetts, more or less. They actually moved 28 times prior to moving into Orchard House, where she lived and where she wrote Little Women. She had three sisters. So you have Anna, who's the oldest. You have Louisa, who's the second and sort of the middle child in some ways. So I feel like I resonate with her. Then you have Beth, or Elizabeth or Lizzie, depending on what they're writing about, or Betty, which is one of my favorite nicknames for her. And then the youngest is May. You rearrange that and you get Amy, who is the artist in the family in the story of Little Women. So you
wait,
have,
Amy's not a sister.
Amy is not, her name in real life was May, but in Little Women, she's Amy.
Oh.
So they all have different names. So Beth is Beth.
Uh-huh.
Amy is May. Louisa is Joe in Little Women. And then Anna turns into Meg. So they have different
that was a
names.
Lot. Okay, I got
I know.
It.
Luckily, at the very beginning of my book, I like outline it because I'm like, there are real people and then there are the book people.
Yeah.
So Louisa has this crazy idea to write a story about her family. Actually, she didn't have it. Her publisher did. Girls are learning how to write in America, and she's like, how can I help? And so she wrote this story about her sisters. She said she thought it was pretty uninteresting, and then all of a sudden it exploded into everyone gets this, everyone has siblings or people that this reminds them of. And so Louisa wrote a book called Little Women about her family. It's one of the most well-loved pieces in American literature. It's been in print for over 150 years. It's been translated into over 50 different languages. And so I work at Orchard House, which is the house where she wrote the book and where the book is set. As she talks about these girls growing up in Little Women, she really was kind of growing up as a teenager and a 20-something-year-old. And so I work there. It's a real house. And we walk around and we show people things. And over 80% of what's in the house really belonged to the family. And so that story feels very tied to my own just because I'm in her house all the time. Yeah. You know, I'm dusting Louisa's bedroom.
Yeah, yeah. And they walked through grief in their own way as a family as well.
Yeah, well, you know, they were in what we call in American history, right before the Reconstruction, was this little thing called the Civil War. And so the Civil War in the 1860s happens. And during that time period, there was a lot going on culturally. There was a lot of unrest. There was a lot of loss, people going off to war, not coming back. But then within their own family, we have the story of Elizabeth, or Beth in the story, who gets very, very sick. And then she died when she was 22 years old of complications from scarlet fever, and is the most like her character in the book. So in some ways, Little Women was also sort of memorializing Beth and saying, this is what we've lost. And I think that it was really Beth's story that makes a lot of people love that book, because they're like, oh, we all have a Beth.
Yeah.
Everybody knows someone they lost too early. And so Louisa wrote that story as a way of saying, hey, we're grieving. And I think that's really, really what resonates with people.
Oh, it's so good. You know, you spoke earlier about when you and Jill met. You tell in the book how y'all met, like in the laundry room at the mm-hmm. dorms, and you guys are doing what every college girl is doing. You're doing your laundry, you meet, you talk about this kind of ordinary life mm-hmm. and about how so many of us are kind of looking for and values this somatic life. We want the big, we want the bold,
yes.
We want the extra, we want all the things. But there's just this beauty to this normal life. Mm-hmm. And you even just mentioned it with Louisa and what she was writing about. And you quote in here, Louisa, you quote at 15, she wrote in her journal, I will do something by and by. Don't care what. Teach, sew, act right, anything to help the family. And I'll be rich and famous and happy before I die. See if I won't. So here, not much different than 15-year-olds today, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to be rich and famous. And then you say she wanted wealth and power and to be known. But you know what? She reflected on later on her life, and she said, had the pleasure of providing Marmy with many comforts and keeping the hounds of care and debt from worrying her. She sits at rest in her sunny room, and that is better than any amount of fame to me. And I thought about that, and I thought about you and I and everyone who's listening and watching, and these like normal things in our life
mm.
that can sometimes feel mundane, pointless, useless. Why do you think we miss out on treasuring the normal, ordinary things of life?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say part of it has to do with, there's so many different reasons. One of the main reasons is that we look at life as this big, epic, amazing thing. You know, you go on Instagram, you see the best of someone's life. You go on TikTok and everybody's doing a trending thing and trying to one-up each other with cleverness and things like that. And it's always, you know, better, faster, stronger kind of mentality in the world around us. But I think we also treat scripture like that sometimes. We open our Bibles and we're like, okay, I know John 3:16, or I know Philippians 4, you know, I can't even remember what it is.
Philippians 4:13,
there it is. There are all these different passages of scripture that we're like, these are the greatest hits of Christianity, you know? And I just feel like that's great. It's good to know scripture. And none of those scriptures are, you know, lesser than or anything like that. However, when we only look at the greatest hits, then we only assume that God is there in these big, powerful, inspirational moments.
Right.
And we forget that there are plenty of stories in the Bible that are overlooked, that are never read. You know, people kind of joke about like reading, you know, the smaller books in the Old Testament and, oh, that's too far away, that's too whatever. But what we're really doing is we're depriving ourselves of realizing that God is seen in ordinary places, in small stories, in kind of random, quirky, weird stories. And then when those things happen in our lives, we think, oh, well, this is different than the epic faith story mm-hmm. I want. And it's like, but if we were to see, there's a story in the Old Testament where there's a young couple and they're going to end up getting married. And the first time they see each other, it says in scripture that she was like riding a camel, and then she like dismounted from her camel and like went and talked to him or whatever. And in the Hebrew, it actually says like she fell off her camel. Like she dismounted like against her will. Like she fell. And I love that, because how many times have we been in a high pressure situation or we see some guy that we're like, okay, and you like trip or make a fool of yourself or something like that. And I love that scripture leaves in little details like that, that are so subtle and that are so relatable. I think scripture is so relatable, but when we don't recognize it as such or familiarize ourselves with it as much, then we think to ourselves, well, why invite Jesus to the dinner table, to the argument in my marriage, to the way I'm parenting my kids, to the situation I have at work? Like, why relate him to that? Because I think he's not for this. He's for only those few things that I've sort of like assigned him to, you know?
You know, when you think about that conversation, what we're talking about now, and you take it into the scope of like grief and loss and sorrow, I'm here listening to you and I'm thinking, man, if there comes a day, and it might happen, when I am on my deathbed and I'm remembering my life, like, I do think it's the ordinary things that are going to bring me the most joy.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the fame or the books or the podcast, but it's the ordinary things with the people that I love that are going to bring me the most joy. Something I'm really bad at that I want to be better at is remembering those things. And, you know, Emily P. Freeman talks about a lot about just like journaling the regular things that happen in your day so you can look back and remember them. I'm really bad about that.
Yeah. And I mean, I went to Elizabeth Elliot's funeral a few years ago, which is like,
wow, how
crazy.
Did you get invited to that?
See, that's what you would think. That's the right reaction, because it's Elizabeth Elliot. Yeah. She was this very famous missionary, and her husband was very famously martyred. And they made a movie about it. And there's books about it. And she was an author and a speaker and all these things. And when she died, she was living in a little coastal town near New England, because the seminary I went to, which I lived down the street from, she had married a man who went there as well, and was a professor there. And so she, you know, she passed away, and she's a local person. And so I got to go to her funeral. But what I loved about it was, you know, sure, they get up there and they talk about her tremendous faith and everything. But what I loved was that her family got up and said, you know, she did the greatest impressions of people. And they just started like laughing at like the sense of humor she had, and the conversations they would have at the dinner table, where she would be like mimicking her Sunday school teacher and like have everyone in stitches. And I just remember thinking, there it is.
That's it.
Like Elizabeth Elliot herself, who you said, whoa, Elizabeth Elliot's funeral. But it's like, but at the funeral, they just said, oh, man. She really knew a good joke. And I love that, because I think we overlook it. And you're so right. At the end of it all, what it'll really come down to is Jesus and how he met us in simple ways. And we'll probably forget some of the big things that we thought were so important.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it's important, even as we're listening to this conversation, the people who are listening, you and I, is like to even realize and understand to chase those simple, ordinary things, like to do a better job of chasing the ordinary things. You have mentioned that you and Jill developed a friendship in college, and then you were in her wedding, and then really that last 9 months of her life, you guys developed an even deeper friendship. And I was really blown away at the conversations that you let us in the book. There are probably a million that are close to your heart and won't see the public eye. But the conversations that you did let us in on, so many times I just thought, what a friend you were to her, for her to call and you just like, I don't know what to say, so let's just like recount Bible stories. And let's just recount the faithfulness of God, and let me just be here for you. You talk here about how important it is for have friendships that allow us to be in the midst of those who have mourned with Christian hope. Can you talk to me about some of the friendships that you have even developed over the last couple of years where they have helped you walk through this different stages of grief in your own life?
Yeah. I mean, the first person that comes to mind, and I think she was on the show recently, is Clarissa Mall, who is a widow and lives 10 minutes from me.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's so fun. She was really excited that I was coming down here. She says hi.
So if you guys want to hear her show, which I highly recommend. I can still remember something she said to me. I was sitting right over there in the corner. I remember that conversation. It was episode 427, if you guys want to go look for it.
She's phenomenal. So Clarissa is someone who's experienced loss. Her husband died July 19th, 2019, in a hiking accident. And I remember hearing about it in the town. Someone was, oh, there's this local mom and, you know, this is what she's experienced. And I remember saying, wow, like, if they need anything, you know, like meals, whatever, like, let me know. And I'm just thinking, this poor human. And then by the Lord's grace, we ended up connecting and got coffee right after Jill died, actually. That was like one of our first conversations. And I think having someone who's been through like death and not even necessarily in the same way, right? Mm-hmm. She lost a spouse, right, which is so much more intimate than the loss of a friend. And yet, like, so many of our shared experiences are similar. Yesterday, when I was sitting on the plane with this gal, I sent a text to Clarissa and I said, this is who I'm sitting next to. And she immediately was like, I'm so sorry. And like, how are you feeling? Because she knew that it was taking everything in me, because it was, to not just burst into tears and want to say everything and nothing to this woman. Like, there's so much going on in my head and my heart. And so someone who knows that deeply, I think, is Clarissa. And I think our friendship has been so rich because we know each other's stories enough. They went on a road trip recently and, you know, her husband died on a road trip. They were vacationing with their family. And so I just showed up that morning that they were leaving and just wanted to, like, hey, guys, like, just want to send you off. And these are the things we'll do when you get back, and kind of just like, let's talk about it and let's be there for each other. And so I think in highs and lows, it's been sweet to have a friendship like that and to have someone who not just has experienced things, but also like who knows the Lord and has experienced his faithfulness and can continue, you know, we can iron sharpen iron, you know, there and we can walk through that together. And so I think the way I see friendships is different. I just went last month, actually, to surprise my parents and my family out in California, because over the pandemic, my dad and I would have conversations and I realized how much I just want to enjoy my parents. You know, like, I want to enjoy them right now while we can go and do things. And I have so many friends in that different season of life where that's not an option. And so I think that because I've walked through these years, I think, wow, like, ordinary really is precious. And so I just, like, got to show up and surprise them. And it was really sweet to be with my family in an unexpected way, but to just soak them in. I feel like that's the thing I keep coming back to, is the opportunity we have to just, like, what a tremendous honor it is to befriend and to have friends and to just be with one another. We often take it for granted and it's assumed, you know, I can't get back to someone in a text and I'm like, oh, I'll text them later. And that's normal. But also it's made me pause a little bit and say, wow, what a gift. Like, I sometimes still text Jill's phone during like milestone moments, just as a way of my own grief. And one day someone's going to respond and be like, hello, who is this? Because they have that number. But I think about, man, I wish I could text her. I wish that I could be in contact. And so I try to treat relationships like an honor and not some sort of obligation or some sort of given, because they're just not.
Yeah. You know, that makes me want to ask you, a lot of people wonder, like, I don't know what to do when I have a friend who's walking through grief, whether that be a friend who lost a spouse, a friend who had a miscarriage, a friend whose best friend from college died, whatever it may be. You write in your book, you say, I'm sure you've had someone walk through a season of want and not known what to say to them, so I'd like to spell it out for you. You said, I put in all caps. You were nice, so you didn't put all caps. You said, put on your dang boots and go to them.
Yeah.
And what is it like for us to become the body around someone? I mean, you said put on your dang boots and go to them. That can feel scary. That can feel like I'm going to say the wrong thing. I don't understand what they're going for. What if they don't want me to show up? Like, what is the thing for us to do as fellow believers to wrap our arms around someone who's just gone through something really tragic?
Yeah. I mean, as human beings, we typically do not underthink. Like, we overthink. We overthink everything. What if this happens? What if that happens? And I think sometimes it's just building relationships where you can say exactly what's going on and there is reception there, that it's not about me making this person feel better. I had that thought yesterday where
with
I was like,
woman on the plane.
With the woman on the plane, I was like, what can I do? How can I help? What should I say? What should I not say? And I, when I was texting Clarissa, and I said to her, I said, you know, I'm realizing I can't give her anything.
Right.
And I can't do or say anything that's going to change the situation she's in. And I think I can just give her presence and ask questions. And that's about it. And I think we want so badly to help, which is a good thing. We want to be helpful friends. Yeah. But sometimes it's recognizing, okay, I'm probably going to get this wrong at some point. And even saying to them, hey, I don't really know what to say here. I don't know what to do. What would, you know, would this be helpful? Would that be helpful? I think sometimes when we put it on them, it can be a problem. Uh-huh. When it's like, Jamie, you're having a hard time. What can I do? You're not going to know.
Yeah,
don't worry about it. But if I was to say, hey, Jamie, like, you're having a hard time. Can I bring you dinner on Tuesday or Wednesday? And like, give you something really specific to hold on to. I think that offers something that is tangible, that is easy. After Jill passed away, I had friends text me like, hey, do you have a hotel to stay at when you go to the memorial service? Can my husband's, you know, like, he had points from his business and whatever, like, can we help you with that? Or can I help you with a rental car? Can I buy you dinner? And there are sort of these ways that people can just show up in tangible ways. And then I think the big thing is, like, don't forget them 2 weeks out, 3 weeks out, 4 years out, like, remember anniversaries, all those things, because that person is living in their mind, in their situation all the time. Sometimes they need to process it. Sometimes they need to be taken out of it. And so I've had conversations with friends where I'm like, do you want to talk about it or should we talk about something else? What would be the most beneficial in that way? And I definitely got it wrong. I think about even with Jill, like, there were times that I was asking her questions about how she was feeling. And she was like, I don't want to talk about it. Like, I'm sick of talking about how sick I feel. And I was like, okay. And I felt bad. And part of me, I will say this, part of me in my own brain that's just not adjusted to that conversation was like, oh man, now I feel bad and I feel this way. And it's like, finally I was like, Melissa, like, okay, but like, it's not your thing. Yeah. Like, you need to help her with whatever she wants. And one of the things that I say sometimes when I'm like talking to people specifically about branding, but I feel like it's true in life,
uh-huh.
is like, we want to, you want to like be to that person what they need you to be, not what you want them to need you to be.
Okay, expand on that a little bit.
So what I mean is, I could say like, and then I brought Jamie dinner and then I felt like I did my part, but you could have 20 meals in your fridge,
right.
and you're like, I'm sick of it. So I want to help you in this season that we've, you know, made up of Jamie's having a hard time. Like, I want to be able to say, I want to help her and do what's actually helpful for her, not what I want to be helpful
right.
to her.
Right, that's so good.
Because it could be that what's helpful to you is like, can you go take my car to get washed?
Yep.
Or can you go and like pick up my kids at school, and it's not as like interesting or as like, wow, I did this thing.
Uh-huh.
But like, sometimes that's exactly what they need. And I think doing that then allows them to ask for help later, and it builds trust. And so saying, hey, I'm here for you, I'm not just here for what I want you to want me for, definitely helps build actual trust. And I think in that moment when I said, hey, Jill, here's a question, and she was like, no, shut it down, there was freedom for her to do that. Because we had established, I don't think Jill doesn't love me anymore. I don't think we're not friends anymore. But it was like, ooh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I didn't handle that well.
Yeah. And I think that comes from like just trust within relationships as well. Because I want a friend who I can say, I don't need any meals.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to say, okay, what do you need? And for me to say like, I've got these three prescriptions that I cannot leave because I'm so sick. Can you go get them?
Yes.
And then be like, yeah, that sounds great. And for there to be trust so that I have the ability to tell them what I really need,
mm-hmm.
and them have the ability to say, okay, I'm down for that.
Yeah. And it goes down to like ordinary things too, not just those intense grief. I mean, for 15 months, I didn't have a job, which I talk about in the book. Like, there was that season. There's like doubting, like, what is my identity, my calling? Like, what am I supposed to be doing with my life? Like, those major sort of questions were all happening at the same time. And then the pandemic starts and I'm alone for like months, which is just always a bad experience in your mind, as we all know.
Yeah.
And so I think that one of the things that's been helpful recently was I was talking to my friend Clay. He helps me with my AC units, because one time when I was grieving, I dropped an AC unit out my window onto the asphalt two stories below.
Okay.
So oops. Luckily no one was like walking by at that moment.
Yep.
But you know, we make a lot of decisions we shouldn't when we're struggling. And I was just like so stressed and grieving. But also like, as a single woman, like, AC units are heavy. And in New England, you have to install them in your windows. You only have window units, no AC. And so I think it's one of those things where he just knows now.
Mm.
So like, I'll call him, you know, my first summer, I call, hey, Clay, would you help me with this? And he's like, yes. And then I get a text message like pretty faithfully every April, like, hey, when do you want to put them in? And he just reaches out to me, and because he knows that's a need I have. And so it's like, to continue to check in and to be consistent means that you're not just doing something in a way that it's like, okay, checked that box, now they're fine.
Yeah.
But it's saying, hey, you still might not be fine, or you still might need something in general that isn't super like emergent, but it is really helpful Because as friends, we should just like help each other, and we forget that until we're in crisis.
I love it. And I love that you two just kind of mentioned like grieving is not just the death of someone. Like we grieve so many things in our lifetime that sometimes we don't acknowledge that we need to grieve or that we are grieving. Mm-hmm. A job loss, a death of a dream, a really just maybe death of weekend that we thought was going to be like the pinnacle of our September and it didn't happen and we could grieve that. I also think it's, we've said this so many times on the show, but I think it's worth saying again and again and again, is to remember those dates. You just like out as if it was your birthday, like said when Clarissa's husband passed away. Mm-hmm. You remember that.
You know what's funny? Is it is my birthday.
Oh. That is the most random thing ever. That is
also
your birthday.
Also, fun fact. I mean, I would like, I do remember certain dates, but that one in particular was my 30th birthday. Isn't that crazy?
It is your birthday. Yeah. But I write them down on my calendar because I do not remember things like that. I have two friends who have, you know, lost their dad both in the month of June, and there they are. And so I can text them every June. Remember when that is. I have some other friends that had some the most like terrible thing happen in their family one time, and I remember that date, and I send their kids cookies.
Yes.
Now I should send them chocolate chip cookies from Boston, but that's right. I send them cookies just to say like, hey, I remember you and I see you, you know, and it's so, so very important. You talk in here and you say that our wounding from our losses mark us. How are you marked from what you've been through?
Well, I mean, I feel like there are a lot of little things. Something happened this last week that I was like, oof, I want to reach out to that person who's dead. And I can't. And then there's a sadness that happens there. I think it's marked me in the way I interact with other people, like this gal on the plane. It's marked me in the way that I see people walking through grief of their own, because just, you know, just the other day, it feels like, you know, I was walking through that. And it's easy when we're not in a season of loss to say, oh, well, that doesn't exist in the world anymore. But it does. Like, we all know somebody who is going through it right now. And so the way that I think it's marked me is it's helped me to focus. It's trite to say this, but like helped me to focus on eternity a bit and to say, what is the big picture? And so recently somebody, their father passed away. And before that, there was someone whose child passed away. And when I talk about them, there is this sense of like, oh, and now they're all together, right? Like now, like this father who is elderly and this child who's 3 days old, and we have Jill who's 28, and all of them are together. Like what an amazing reality that we forget exists. And so sometimes the most comforting thing to me when I experience a loss of a person, especially is to say, wow, like, I love Jesus and Jesus is with me and this person is with Jesus. And in some weird way, like we are all connected, and it's this beautiful image of like, thank God this is not it.
Yeah.
Like, thank God that there is an eternity, that there is an opportunity to see that person. Just this morning, my book marketing manager at Good Book Company, she just said, you know, like, have fun with Jamie today. And she's awesome. And I said, thanks so much. And I said, you know, I'm feeling a lot of feels about it. And she responded and said, like, you know, she was like, a good cry is sometimes really good. And I can't wait to meet Jill one day. And I loved that. I read that and was like, yeah, because you will. And so there is this hope that we have as believers. And I would say to those who feel like, it's a question mark if they'll see them again, or what, we don't know certain things about eternity and the world around us. The thing I keep thinking is like, but you know what? Like, the Lord is kind, and he shows us as we walk through grief that he is near, that he is so tender toward us. And it's like, and so we just show up and hope for the best and say, Lord, like, I know that your plans are better, that his make more sense, that he says, get on the 8 o'clock flight. You know, that he knows where I'm supposed to be. And I think there's a level of trust that I didn't have with him before that now I say, oh, yeah, like he's going to make the right call. And that makes me sleep a little easier, though. Admittedly, my smoke detectors sometimes go off in the middle of the night and I don't love that. But metaphorically, of course, I think there are times that I can breathe a little deeper than I did before. And I think at one point I say this in the book, but it's true, like the idea that keeps coming through my head is like, Lord, like, you lead us to a better end, not a bitter end. And that in and of itself is a gift in this world that says, what's next? Is there any hope? Like, wow, what a gift to be able to say, yeah. And we get to experience it in part right now and in full later on.
Yeah. You know, I'm constantly thinking about our listeners. We're chatting and I know that there are a lot of people who are listening who are maybe in my boat where we haven't walked through this, a tremendous loss recently in our life. And so this conversation is just this great big reminder and encouragement to find the ordinary, to look for the ordinary, to cherish your friends, to really walk beside each other and love each other well. That's kind of what I'm feeling. And then there's others who are listening, and they are like you write in here. You said maybe they have been through a great loss and they are in this space, and you write this about them, a peeking out behind closed shutters, trying to decide if it's safe to come out. Mm. And I feel that person, like, I don't know why I feel like I'm going to cry, but I think about that person of just going like, I can't do this. And like, I don't want to come out. Like, this life has been too hard. Mm-hmm. This world has shown me nothing but heartache. And there are so many people who are listening right now. And so I want to ask you to do something kind of weird. I want you to read some of your words.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I feel like just everything that I kind of did here. And I want you to speak to that person who literally is kind of has their hand over their eyes and thinking, I don't know if I want to come out anymore. I don't know if it's safe to come out. And you wrote these words towards the end of your book, and I think that they are just for this person.
Wow. Well, thanks. This is what I desperately want you to know. You are right now in the best possible position to be loved by God. It doesn't matter what you have or what you had, what you gained or what you lost. It doesn't matter what triumphs of profession or moments of victory preceded this. And it doesn't matter what's coming down the road either. All we have is this one hilarious, ordinary, heartbreaking, very human life. He doesn't accept us on the basis of anything other than what we are, and his kindness is not being withheld, but it's sometimes obstructed by the fog that surrounds us in seasons of devastation and long bouts of sorrow. The world we live in is just as broken now as it was in the 1800s after extensive loss and heartache, and maybe even deconstruction. It can seem as though our own civil war has been raged, but maybe there is a moment coming for each of us that points to reconstruction. I mean, it just, I feel like sometimes I just want to grab those people that, first of all, thank you for listening, because you probably read this topic and just like wanted to skip this episode. So if you've made it this far, well done. But I think that's the thing I think of is like, I just want to grab them by the face and just be like, hey, like I've been there. Like I have used, there are words that are not in this book that are swear words, because I have been in that place with the Lord of like, you know what? If you don't show up in the way I want you to show up, I'm out. Like, I'm tired of saying, like, God is good all the time when I feel like it is not good and it is hard. And I'm tired of saying, get out of bed because it might get better tomorrow. I need it to be okay now. And even if it's not fine, it can still be well. And I think there's a big difference in the way that we come to our lives when we're grieving, and the Lord meets us in it, right? He meets us in the dust. He meets us in the mess. And I needed in that season to know that if I don't have a job and I'm single and I'm alone and I'm grieving and like all these insecurities are happening, like, am I still loved by God? And is he still okay with this? And there's actually this song by Beth Bernard, who wrote the foreword, who is just like one of the greatest human gifts to me in the last year. And she has this song where she says, like, I have to reconcile that you still want to be with me when I'm like this, right? It's this idea of he still wants to be near to us. And he's just like, there it is. Like, let's hang out. Like, he doesn't want us to be made up. He doesn't want us to be in a place where like everything is fine. Like, he wants us to come to the crap with the crap show and be like, this is all I have. And he's like, great. Like, I'm so glad. Like, when you send that text and you're like, what can I bring to dinner? And they're like, oh, like, just yourself. And you're like, yeah, right. Like, I'm bringing something. Like, he truly does just want us to bring ourselves. And I think that that is just unbelievable. But it means that we can lose everything and we can have totally empty hands and it's enough. And it actually reminds me of, and I didn't mention this in the book, but like this scene in Little Women where Joe and the professor finally end up together. It's a chapter called Under the Umbrella. And he's telling her, like, I don't have anything to offer you. Like, I'm poor. Like, if you marry me, it's not going to go well for you, like, financially. And he says, you know, my hands are empty. And then she takes her hands and she puts them in his and she says, they're not empty. And I think that that's what the Lord does in some way when we have our hands and we say, I got nothing. I got words that aren't friendly. I'm really terrible to be around. And he's just like, that's it.
That's who I want.
Yeah.
Melissa, I am really grateful for you pouring your heart out into this book. And I think it's going to be kind of like this like warm blanket for so many people who read it, who just feel like, man, I've gone through so much. Is there anyone else that understands? And not only are you coming to the table saying, hey, I understand, you're bringing us along this journey and pointing us all the way back to the 1800s.
Might as well.
1800s?
Yeah,
1800s. But more importantly than that, the reason I wanted you to read that last part of your book is because you point us the whole time to a God who really says, I am here for you, even if it feels scary. Like, yeah. I am here for you. So, Thank you.
Oh, well, I'm glad to be here and to get to just share these stories. It's kind of wild. And I was texting you about this the other day where I was like, this feels weird. Because in some ways it's regular life.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, well, shoot, like if I can cheer others toward looking for Jesus in the middle of it, you know, yesterday when I walked away from this gal, I handed her, I have this little wooden holding cross, which is just kind of like something to play with your hand, sort of, but it's like a little cross and it's kind of a funky shape. So it sort of fits between your fingers because a cross often has like right angles. It's like kind of, you know, hard to grab. But I have this holding cross that I take with me on planes when there's turbulence or stressful situations, or when, you know, when I was walking through job loss, when I was walking through losing friends, like things like that. And, at the end of the trip, you know, I handed it to her and I was like, I want you to have this. And she was like, oh, like she was very caught off guard. And she was like, are you sure? And I was like, yes. Like I was like, it is worn in. It is ready for you. And I gave it to her. And I just have this image in my mind of walking out of the airport and seeing her up ahead. And she just like had it in her hand. And it feels like that is it. Like we're just out here handing each other the cross and saying, I want you to have this, and I don't know if I'm going to get to talk to you again, and I don't know what's going to happen in your story or in my story or anyone else's, but like I gave you the cross and I know that that's all I can do, and I know it'll be enough.
We're still out here handing people the cross.
Yeah.
We have something that we've always done on the show is ask what they're reading and what they're loving. Okay, so you ready for that?
As ready as I can be.
As ready as you can be. Now, I want to tell you, for the last two episodes, we've had something new in the show, and I think people have realized it. But you're the first person that gets to hear it live in person before we do the before I ask you the question. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, here it is. This is brand new. Ready?
Jamie wants to know. We want to know what you're reading.
Wow. I have a jingle.
That's cool. And I love that it starts with like, Jamie wants to know.
It's Jamie like, wants to know.
And everyone else, but Jamie wants to know.
You're going to text me tomorrow. You'll be singing that in your head. I know it.
100%. You know, it'll take the place of that Korn song that's going around.
Oh, what is that?
The Korn song. The people that are listening to this, I'm sorry. I just put it back in your head. It's a little boy talking about how much he loves to eat corn.
I've seen that and I don't get it.
A song. I'll explain it after.
I thought you were talking about the Korn, the song that I make Story listen to, country music. She sang it on that show a couple weeks ago.
Korn is a good thing.
Corn makes corn. Rain makes corn. Corn makes whiskey. Yeah, that one.
Yeah,
that's exciting. No, but this is where I want to know what you're reading. So what are you reading these days?
Ooh, good question. So this is about to be, people are like, is she crazy? So I'm reading The Journal of Ellen Tucker Emerson. It sounds like a really cool fiction book, but it's really The Journal of Ellen Tucker Emerson, who was Ralph Waldo Emerson's daughter.
Okay.
And he was a famous philosopher and had this daughter who had a lot of paper and a lot of ink, and because they were pretty well off, and so she just wrote about everything in her life, about going over to Orchard House and hanging out with them because they were friends, and you know, talking about cats with Anna / Meg. And I'm like, this is so weird. And she like regularly writes home from school, and she's at a boarding school, and she's regularly like, can you please send me a dollar? And it makes me laugh every time because it's like, this is a lot more money back then. But it's just like, some things never change. So I've been reading her journal. Sounds
just like every teenager now.
Exactly.
I need money. Now it's like, can you Venmo me some money?
Yeah. So I'm reading this historic journal because it just, it kind of anchors me in like, nothing's changed. So that's been a big win.
Okay.
I've really, really enjoyed that. And then I just picked up a book on the history of home economics.
Oh.
That I haven't started yet, but I'm really excited to dig into it.
As in, like, home economics in general, or, like, the class people
like,
take?
Yeah, like, the class people take, and how, like, the things in the home became a science that you could study, and how it moved from in women's kitchens to like becoming their careers and influencing the food industry and all these different places that like the home influenced because of home economics.
Wow.
Yeah.
You want a fun fact?
Yeah.
When I was in eighth grade, I was home economics student of the year.
No way.
Yeah, which is very ironic that I don't cook or clean or have a sewing machine or own an ironing board or any of those things that like That's home amazing. Economics would build into people.
Was there like something you made or did that?
Yeah, we made the little pillows. I can't remember what mine was, but you know, it's like you make the pillow.
Jamie killed it with the pillow.
I must have done a really good job with that pillow, which now, like I couldn't sew a button on if you made me.
But you did in eighth grade.
I did in eighth grade.
That's right. People change.
Okay, two things. Number one, we're going to have to let people know about our book club.
Yes, seriously. I'm in.
Women Book Club. But I want to know what's fun and exciting in your world right now?
Ooh, fun and exciting in my world right now. Well, it's birthday month this month and next month for a number of my nieces and nephew. So that's very exciting. There's a lot of birthdays over Zoom. There's a lot of... I did some interviews with them recently. Okay. I learned that... The 4-year-old is not easy to live with. She doesn't clean up after herself, says the 7-year-old.
Okay, not surprising. So
that's been something fun. It's just like watching my nieces and nephew grow up and getting to do that. The other thing that's exciting is we have Cheer Her On weekend coming up.
Tell us about it.
So Cheer Her On, the podcast, has this weekend once a year. We get women together. Sorry, guys. And we go to New England and you grab a plane ticket, come on out. And for 2 days, we're going to take you around. We go to Orchard House, of course. So we'll tour Orchard House. We're going to go to America's oldest farm. We're going to eat good New England things. We're going to take you to an antique store that I talk about
clam
a lot.
Clam chowder, is that on the list?
Clam chowder can be on the list.
I love New England clam chowder.
Oh, it's so great. Yeah. And so we kind of take them to these iconic places, but this year we're focusing on the idea of what cannot be lost and how to learn to celebrate after loss. Mm. And so it's like, hey, I don't know what you've lost. It could just be like your wallet. Like, I don't care. Yeah. But like, come and we're going to talk about
things.
It. And you make new friends, which is fun. So it's a pretty small crowd, but it's fun. And then this year's guest, we do a live podcast. This year's guest is Nicole Zasowski.
Love her.
She wrote a book called What If It's Wonderful? So she's going to drive up from Connecticut. Yep. She's another New Englander.
Yep.
And we're going to do that. So that's October 15th and 16th. So hopefully when this airs, there's a few tickets left.
And where do they go to get tickets?
You can just go to cheerheron.com and you'll see Cheer Her On Weekend at the top.
Perfect.
And it's so fun.
We'll put it in the show notes. And I definitely am like, can you let me know about 2023? Because that sounds so much fun. But you also have a podcast series coming up. And people who are listening to us now, they love listening to podcasts. And you're going to do a series on your book. And so talk to us about that, because this comes out on the 14th. I think you will have started that on the 12th, maybe.
Yes. So the 12th is our first episode. And if you're listening to this on the 14th or after, we're actually extending, big announcement, we're extending how long you can do this. So if you pre-order the book and then you go to thegoodbook.com, which we'll put in the notes, but you go to thegoodbook.com/not-lost, you'll find that you can actually download a free full copy of the ebook. So the minute you pre-order, you get the book, which is pretty cool.
Wow, that's awesome.
So we're going to do that. And each week we're talking to different guests and we're talking about one chapter at a time. So you'll read a chapter and then we'll talk about it starting on September 12th. So that's something I'm excited about. We have a lot of guests that are just going to bring, like Beth Bernard is kicking us off, or kicked us off, I guess, if you're listening to this the 14th.
Yeah.
And she's just one of my favorite people. So we talk about what do we do when we're in loss. We have Grace Cho, we have Shannon Martin, Felicia Masonheimer, and Vivian Mabuni, and a bunch of other gals that are coming to just talk to us about their experience of loss, but then kind of tie it back into the book and just read the book together. So
that'll run for
9 weeks, which I'm excited about.
That's so fun. Okay, you guys, we'll put all of these notes in. All of these links in the show notes, because when you said something, something, hyphen, something, I lost you. So we're going to put all of these in the show notes.
Yes.
You can find it. Melissa, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for coming down to Austin, Texas.
It's fun. You know, I'm here for the tacos and Jamie Ivy.
I was going to say, that needs to be a t-shirt. I'm here for the tacos and Jamie Ivy. I would never 100%. Make that to a t-shirt, by the way, first of all. After I said that out of my mouth, I was like, no.
That's right. That's right.
But I'm here for the tacos. That's a cute shirt.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Tacos, Topo Chico. There are so many things that don't exist in the northern states.
No,
so
Topo Chico?
I'm excited. No, you can find it for like $9 at Whole Foods.
Okay.
It's like ridiculous. Yeah. But around here, it's just like.
And you took a Topo Chico out of my fridge the minute you got here. I saw
100%.
You. I love it. I love it. I'm here for you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivy podcast. We are truly grateful for every single story that we get to share with you, every encouragement we get to give you, and every opportunity we get to point all of us to Jesus. If you're loving this show, we would really appreciate it if you would leave us a rating and or a review
wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, tell your friends. That is the number one way that people find out about our show. It's because you tell them. Join us right here every Wednesday and Friday for meaningful conversations that will make us think, they'll make us laugh, and they'll always point us back to Jesus. And come find me other places on the internet as well. I love Instagram. I'm over there at Jamie Ivy. And if you've never visited my YouTube page, you're going to want to go there. Have you ever listened to a show and wondered, I wonder what they look like? Well, go find us over there. It's jamieivy.com/YouTube. The Happy Hour is a production of Ivy Media Podcasts. Executive producer, Jamie Ivy. The show is produced by Lindsay Sweeney and edited by Angie Elkins. Art by Jen Jett Barrett. Original music by Matt Graham. And I'm your host, Jamie. Have a happy hour with a friend.